So am I still waiting? Waiting a long time.
Waiting for tonight. Oh.
Listen to review,
before you men go out there tonight, there are a few things I have to get off my chest. Firstly, I have every confidence that Team WWF will be victorious here tonight. Every confidence in you. However, I am a pragmatist, and I realize I could be looking at a group of losers. And if that were to happen here tonight, if you were to lose this match tonight, I would like for you to remember a number of things. There isn't one WWF fan anywhere in the world that would ever, ever forgive you. Not one. Should you lose this match tonight, each and every one of you would be personally and professionally disgraced. Should you lose this match tonight, then all of you and each one individually would justifiably be ridiculed by your own peers and your own family members. Should you lose this match tonight, then what does it say for those who have preceded you? Those who have passed on, yet their spirit still lives here in the World Wrestling Federation. Names like Buddy Rogers. Names like Dr. Jerry Graham. Names like Gorilla Monsoon. Andre the Giant. High Chief Peter Maivia. I've chosen you to participate in the Survivor Series elimination matchup. And by you joining this team, tonight you will honor the World Wrestling Federation. Now go out there and do it.
Welcome to Review Away, everyone. It's John Pollock and Wei Ting. Another week, Wei. Another review.
Yes.
How many of these are we at now?
Oh, my God. It's almost been
500.
No, it's not been 500 reviews.
200?
Well, there's 52 weeks in a year. And we've been doing this for 2 years.
5 years.
And change. So we've done about 120-ish.
Okay.
Well, but close.
Feels like 500.
Well, it feels like 500 when you're going through the archives and filling in all the gaps. And I can safely say now, every review away is now available in the podcast section of liveaudiowrestling.com in its entirety, on its own, as its own file. They're all there. And I'll be making a list, a simple list for with all the links to everyone. Have you noticed there's an issue with the archives on Facebook, where when you click on the edit button, this will only affect you, not any listeners, because they don't have access. When you click on edit, it won't, it just says error.
I haven't noticed.
This is an
that.
Off-air discussion, I'm realizing.
Yeah.
Check it out.
Here, why don't we muffle our voices? I haven't noticed it.
I have.
Okay.
It's a big problem.
Well, maybe we'll.
I can't update the links there.
Maybe we'll take a look at it afterwards.
Yes.
All right.
Let's Survivor Series.
We're going to cut all this out.
No, we're not. Actually, Wei, we should first chat about our big announcement from this past Monday night.
That is correct.
December 3rd and 4th, Wei. big, big day in days in Review Away history, where we are going to be at the MMA Expo at the International Center in Toronto.
And if you're thinking, I don't live in Toronto. I live in South Africa or Denmark. How does this affect me?
Yeah.
Well, it does affect you. And here's why. We are going to be live at the MMA Expo, John and myself, broadcasting live from the expo all day.
From noon till 5 p.m. Eastern time, Saturday and Sunday, me and Wei are going to be live the entire time. No commercial breaks, no pre-taped interviews, nothing. It is going to be us for 5 hours each day with a multitude of guests, because that's the only way we're going to get through this. And we are encouraging you, if you're in Toronto, come down to the MMA Expo at the International Center. If you get in, come visit us, because anyone that comes to see us, you can be a guest on the podcast, and we'll also hook you up with some law merchandise. That's a pretty cool incentive, I think.
That's right. And stickers.
Yes, we have a limited run of T-shirts, and it's a limited run, so first come, first serve.
Yeah.
But stickers, folks, the law stickers, they look excellent.
That's worth the price of admission, I'd say.
And if you're not in Toronto, then you can simply tune in all day long, Saturday and Sunday, and listen to us at stickcam.com/reviewaway, and you can just listen live. Just pull up your computer and enjoy your Saturday and Sunday with myself and Wei Ting.
We will have just way too much time to talk. So we'll talk a ton of MMA. We'll talk a ton of pro wrestling. Well, you guys are cringing at the thought of MMA. But we will talk a lot about pro wrestling, whatever's going on that week, that weekend. We will also probably talk a lot about everything else that is going on.
Yes. Every topic in our lives will be covered in those 10 hours, I feel. And I'm thinking, if timing works out, Wei, we can maybe review our first SmackDown show on the Saturday to kick things off.
Our first SmackDown? Oh, yes.
From the night prior.
That's a great idea.
I don't think there is no topic that we will not have time for, I feel, in this this two-day marathon. And
maybe we could review our breakfast. We could have lunch.
We could literally have lunch on the air.
Yeah.
So this is going to be fun, folks. 5 hours each day, noon Eastern, Saturday and Sunday, December 3rd and 4th. Once again, the MMA Expo at the International Center, and you can get info at that, mmaexpo.ca. I'm looking forward to it. I think it's going to be a lot of fun. So,
as am I.
And it'll be a giant learning experience for us. One of the two.
It could be a giant train wreck.
It could be.
There could be lots of commercial breaks.
We're live.
I don't know.
Yeah. And we've addressed the connection issue, folks. If our connection goes down, there will be a lawsuit against this International Center. That's all I'm going to say.
Wow, really? Okay. All right.
So there, that's us from the news front. But
for more information, where can people check out the MMA Expo?
MMAExpo.ca has all your information, all the fighters that are going to be in attendance, and the law booth will be there. Dan Lavransky and Jason Agner are going to be popping by both days. And who knows what other guests we will be welcoming to the show. I'm sure there will be plenty there that'll chat with us and sit down. You never know who's going to show up at the MMA Expo.
Never know. And a free tap out energy.
Free tap out energy.
Yeah.
We might have the fridge there.
Whoa.
And Wei, also on today's show, we've got a guest.
Who?
We are going to be joined by former multiple-time Divas champion Trish Stratus, who's going to be joining us to chat about not only an open house going on at Stratosphere Yoga this coming Saturday, but she's going to talk about her very first title win, which coincidentally took place on this show.
Wow. Why did you wait this long to say it? Should have said that off the top.
This is near the top.
All right.
Edit out. Survivor Series, Wei, 2001. 10 years ago, this event took place. This was The Rock's prior Survivor Series appearance before this past Sunday's. So this was kind of a...
Yeah, he was in an O2.
I'm saying his... Yeah, this was... No, 2001 was his last one.
No, he was there in O2. No. Against Lesnar. Or...
No, Lesnar. No, you're right.
That was SummerSlam.
Yep. They get mistaken, SummerSlam and Survivor Series, a lot.
Yeah.
Even our own... Our staff here, when they were putting out the our wheel rundown, wrote my preview as WWE SummerSlam preview.
It's confusing. Maybe they should drop one of them.
Too many S's.
Yeah.
It's the issue with the pay-per-views.
This is totally stupid, but I feel like I should say it anyway. Remember when Vince brought back the NWO
for yes.
at No Way Out?
Yep.
A lot of people speculated that he would do that, and I was on a message board reading a fantasy angle where somebody said, wouldn't it be great if Vince brought back the NWO at No Way Out? And all these other people just started making fun of this guy's stupid idea, saying how, yeah, and at Survivor Series, Hitler is going to bring back the SS.
Wow. Oh, man.
Oh, wrestling fans.
Wrestling fans. I'm sure this extends to all different, fans of different genres. They love to cling on to clever things like that. Like, the NWO are the initials of the pay-per-view as well. And just reading into things that I guarantee you go over the heads of, like, WWE creative at times.
Yeah, but they ended up doing it.
They did do it.
They thought it was a great idea, too.
I think a lot of that, though, just... it coincided with the timing. You weren't going to bring them back at WrestleMania the next month. So,
Whatever. It happened.
That was a horrible show, too, by the way.
It was lackluster.
If you remember. I watched that show in a movie theater, I remember. And by the end of it, I was like, oh, this show sucked.
And you had WrestleMania to look forward to. Live in attendance following that.
Yeah, that's right. That was going into the Toronto show.
Yeah, it was disappointing.
But here we go, folks. This was the end of the invasion. It was supposed to be the biggest storyline in wrestling history. The WWF against WCW, which by the end of this four-month angle, WCW wasn't even being used as the name. They were the Alliance. The Alliance.
Basically, a quick recap, what had happened was... I believe Vince and everybody involved had plans of resurrecting WCW as its own brand, its own TV show.
Yeah, they even talked about giving it, at first it was a Saturday night 2-hour show. They even toyed with the idea of putting it on Monday nights,
yeah.
Which at the time TNN Spike was like, nope.
Yeah, let's get rid of our flagship show
and put Nitro on the show that was canceled.
So we reviewed the Tacoma episode of Raw that was supposed to kick.
That was the turning point.
That was the turning point. That was you could point that to the end of the invasion, really, if you wanted to.
Yeah.
And everything just backfired. The initially positioned babyfaces of WCW were all basically gathered around as heels now, and eventually ECW was brought in to save this WCW invasion. And
for one night, it was a very memorable angle, but the fact that they went through so much in that one night, and we've reviewed that show as well if you want to go to the archives, they went through so much in that one night, and here we are. That was in July, and by November... that was it. They were done.
It wasn't that they went through so much. It was that at the end of it, it was the McMahons controlling everything. And I think that was the terrible decision.
Well, look at this. Look at this Alliance team we got, okay?
Boy.
The end of the culmination of the WWF, WCW, Vince McMahon, Ted Turner war came down to this was your representations of the NWA lineage. We had Steve Austin, Booker T, Kurt Angle, Rob Van Dam, and Garrett Bischoff.
Oh, ridiculous. Yes, Garrett Bischoff. He might as well have been. Oh, you had Steve Austin, who was the WWF champion at the time.
At the time.
Kurt Angle, who wasn't even around during
the Monday
Night
Wars. He was the top babyface for the WWF a month prior.
That was the other thing. Oh, boy. Where do we begin? Where do we begin with the mess that is?
I almost want to review the main event first, but we should build to that. The main event was not pretty, folks. That's all I'm going to say.
Well, we'll talk about it.
Yeah. This was a monumental review, eh?
Why
because how did we start this show?
With a video?
No, we started it at my place.
That is correct, yes.
This is the first time we ever went to watch a review together.
Yeah.
We always watch these separate.
John and I sat on the same couch, in fact, and watch this review.
And one of us fell asleep, not named John.
That is correct.
And Wei told me, okay, we've got to turn this off. I'm done. I can't do this.
I really can't. I don't know if you can either, John, but like I just – it's not – for me, like if these shows – these shows aren't terrible, of course, but the, when they lack relevance to today and – just relevance in general. I mean, a lot of these... The main event was very historically significant, but you take an undercard match like Christian and Al Snow. What impact did any of these other matches have on anything? So, sorry. I was a bit tired.
That's okay. You made it through...
I made it through an hour.
About an hour.
An hour.
So, that's good. It was Sunday, November the 18th of 2001 from Greensboro, North Carolina.
Yeah.
The Mecca of the Mid-Atlantic Territory, where Starrcade launched.
Wow.
Number of times this was referenced on the show, Wei? Zero.
Uh-huh.
It was an opening video we got with a knockoff of The Doors' This Is The End, or The End, which was an appropriate song for this show.
It's a different song, actually. This was like The End Is Near. Isn't it a different song?
I don't think this is a Doors song.
Yeah, it's not a Doors.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. This was the knockoff, WWE version that they would use for years later Armageddon show.
Yeah.
And they just went through this horrendous invasion angle done to this theme. And it felt like I was checking into a funeral here with this song and watching all of this go on.
Yeah, but a happy funeral. This is like a terminally ill patient that you're kind of elated to.
They're going off to a better place.
Yeah.
The show was presented by Xbox.
The brand new Xbox.
Yes, Xbox One.
Xbox 0 degrees. 180.
There was no live. There was no... it was a very basic module at the time.
Yeah.
This was when I fell out of video games, was around 10 years ago. Once it got into the Xbox and PlayStation domination, I was out.
Yeah, the PS2, I was already gone.
I never felt there was a great follow-up to N64. I mean, Wii came along years later, and I got a Wii, but I hate it.
No, there were great follow-ups to the N64. The N64 had some not very good graphics.
I loved N64. Loved that system.
Well, for me, I was a PlayStation guy.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and I don't know. I just fell out of it.
You don't play games at all now?
I would like to, actually. I've read some good reviews for that WWE game. WWE 12?
Yeah, well...
You play as Brock Lesnar?
I remember a year ago buying the SmackDown vs. Raw game. I found it at a place for $30. I was like, perfect. I'm going to play this, have some fun, then I'll give it away. I got home, I played it for 20 minutes, and I've not played it since.
Yeah. Well,
and I'm the kind of person, I would love to be a gamer. I loved video games when I was a kid. I loved sports games. I loved all different kinds of games. I could get obsessed with a video game, and I would love to have that as something where I go home and I play video games for a while. But I can't. Any game I go to play, whether it be the controls or what, I'm too old for this.
I will say that video games have probably gotten a lot more complicated in recent years with many more buttons, many more combinations of maneuvers. There are a lot.
That's what I enjoyed about like Nintendo, and I enjoyed about just other different simple video games.
Two buttons.
Yeah, those were great. Sega had three, and I had to adjust.
Remember when you were debating on whether you were to get a Wii or a cat? You chose the Wii.
I didn't buy it. My girlfriend bought a Wii because she wanted one. But yeah. I'm glad I never got a cat.
Imagine if you got...
I got an offer for a cat.
Yeah, imagine if you got the cat and after 20 minutes, be like, this is too complicated.
Run off buttons. Run off. Just send it out into the wild. Okay. So Xbox was our title sponsor for the Survivor Series. I forgot here, we had Jim Ross and Paul Heyman doing commentary.
The final time.
Yes, the last time they would do a show together. Mm-hmm. And Jim Ross calls this the most important pay-per-view in history. And that tonight, the WWF could go out of business.
Yeah.
I remember even at the time laughing at this.
Yeah. I feel maybe too much emphasis was put on the WWF going out of business and not the WCW going out of business.
I think they didn't even want to tease it because I think that's what – I don't think anyone went into this show thinking the result was in question. I don't think anyone doubted it at all.
Yeah.
There was no juice left in this alliance it's versus WWF storyline.
Just wrap this up. This is the feeling everybody had.
So we start off with Christian, who was representing the alliance against Al Snow for the European title.
It makes no sense. It's just so... the whole thing just leaves such a bad taste in my mouth. I mean, you have guys that have never touched foot in WCW or ECW, and here you have Al Snow, who used to wrestle in ECW, would be good for the alliance.
And Christian, who has never wrestled in a national company outside of the WWF.
Exactly. But it just seemed like the alliance at the time was just a blanket branding for all the heels in the company, no matter what your history was. If you're a heel, you're a part of
WCW. It was so sloppy. It was just so poorly done. And you mentioned it off the top. It was just a few months later that Hogan, Hall, and Nash came in. I mean, for fuck's sake, the next night, Flair debuted. It's like, you know, I understand the arguments of you didn't want to upset the pay structure and bring in all these guys, but at the same time, it's like, we've got this storyline here. It's why do it shitty?
I'm guessing they didn't think it was going to be shitty.
I think they felt this pressure. Well, we have to do it now.
Yeah.
I don't know. I just didn't see, you know, you either go for it or you don't. Mm-hmm. And look at this. You got 4 months out of this, and then all the key guys came in that where this could have been something.
Yeah.
But I don't even have much faith that they would have made it succeed even then, because creative was horrible here.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
This was the first major, major blunder from the company in years since the boom period. This was the first time they just failed at something gigantic within their own product.
This was coming off of their peak at WrestleMania 17, and it just seemed like this actually made their product worse and derailed what something good that they had going.
They mentioned that Christian recently won the European title at a house show a few weeks prior, and then Christian gets heat by saying, "What's up, South Carolina?" when they're in North Carolina. Teddy Long is the referee, and not much to this match. It was fine. We saw an Irish whip into a side Russian leg sweep by Christian. They go back and forth. Good response with Snow. He hit the snow plow, but Christian got his foot on the ropes, and then Christian made his comeback, hit the Unprettier, 6 minutes and 36 seconds to kick off the show.
It was a good opener. Good technical matchup. Al Snow at this time was working his Tough Enough trainer.
Yeah, he was just coming off of that, you know, probably the best exposure of his career. He came off very well on Tough Enough.
It seemed to reflect in his, like, in-ring style, too. Like, he didn't wrestle like a maniac anymore. At times, he still kept parts of his gimmick, but
he was the wise man now.
Yeah, he wrestled like a technical trainer.
No Maven on this show.
No Maven. Nope.
Steve Austin arrives in the back along with Deborah and walks into the Alliance locker room, and Stephanie asks if he is going to turn on them tonight because he smiled at Vince McMahon on SmackDown, and they'll all lose their jobs if they lose.
Everything just like was so blatant that it just telegraphed so much. We have a mole. It must be you.
So Shane is upset here, and Angle wants to be the leader. And everyone just argues.
Yeah.
A cohesive group here.
I was just so confused because this Kurt Angle being in the Alliance thing. Okay, he started off the year in the WWE. Then, as a heel. He started off as a heel. Then, Austin defected to the Alliance, leaving Angle as the WWE representation, as a babyface against Austin.
Yes.
And then 9/11 happened. And then Angle was still a babyface at the time.
Yep.
Now Angle, your 9/11 hero, turns to the Alliance.
Correct.
And at the end of this, he'll turn back. And then after the invasion,
The next night,
turns heel again.
This period of booking, to me, was the reason Angle never caught, like, top main event fire. A year later when he was feuding with Brock, I found this booking of Kurt Angle to be the worst of his career. Even this was also the past summer was when they did the goofy shit with Angle wearing that cowboy hat.
Right.
They did all the stupid stuff with Angle. And yeah, the turns, it was just ridiculous in this like 1 month period. And even this 24 hour period, he turned twice in 24 hours.
Yeah.
Just horrendous. Vince and Linda are in the back, and Vince says that They can't risk everything and still worry about people's safety. Linda was horrible here. Vince says that there's an old saying, shit happens. Or blank blank, as the pay-per-view censored this.
Happens as well? They bleeped out happens?
Maybe. Maybe not.
Okay.
Maybe only the shit got censored.
All right.
A young Michael Cole walks in.
A young, much skinnier, much more gentle Michael Cole.
And you were noting his facial expressions were quite something to behold here.
I don't know if it's part of the direction that they give to all these backstage interviewers, but I always find them to be the the most entertaining parts of these segments, whether it be a... Well, I guess Cole was the most blatant, but even like someone like Coach, just watching their exaggerated facial reactions to what these people are saying. Very funny.
Cole just looked like such a goof here and says that tonight could be the final night of the WWF. And McMahon says he's a good businessman and built an empire by taking risk, and there's always an ace in the hole. And he has six team members tonight, meaning someone on the Alliance is jumping over.
Yeah.
This is the drama of the match, is who is going to turn on the Alliance? Which heel is going to turn?
Yeah, never mind the end of one of the dominant brands in the company.
William Regal appears and says he's not buying Vince's mind games. Austin is loyal, and he's going to enjoy watching their company go down the toilet, and looks forward to the first Alliance Raw, and both Vince and Linda being humiliated.
Has a ring to it.
They at least had a long 24-hour booking in mind here with Regal saying that Vince and Linda would be humiliated on Raw. And in fact, be a 180. Imagine that. Welcome to the Alliance Raw.
Yeah. Imagine seeing that on your TV guide. Alliance Raw.
Heyman says that sports entertainment is gone tonight and wrestling will be back. And then they show a video of Regal putting the Regal stretch on Torrey Wilson on SmackDown, and that set up this match. William Regal, the commissioner of the Alliance, against Jiri, who was the WCW Cruiserweight Champion, who was aligned with the WWF.
Who was managed by Torrey, who was a WCW valet who defected
over to the WWF.
Yeah.
Romance trumped loyalties.
Weird.
This is an impossible show to watch going back to know who was where. It was so confusing.
It'd be easier to watch a show if you never watched wrestling prior to 2001.
So the match starts off. Tajiri kicks him. Regal hits a rolling fireman's carry. Series of low kicks by Tajiri. He gets tangled in the ropes. And then Tajiri applies the tarantula, gets a big reaction. Handspring back elbow by Tajiri, and then Regal tosses Tajiri into the ropes, where Tajiri's neck is tied on the ropes in between. And Regal's got a bloody nose, and this is when he had some like sinus problem, where all his matches he would get these bloody noses, mm-hmm. and he ended up needed surgery for it.
Yeah.
It's an
odd problem.
Yeah, it's like a jaw problem or something.
Huh.
Someone called into the law on Sunday, and I was like, all right, what would you like to chat about? I actually want to ask on the air a question that Wei Ting wanted to ask you, and that's what would happen in a UFC fight if someone's jaw locked?
I didn't want to ask you that.
Well, this guy wanted to ask it, and I did not put him on.
Well, what would happen? I imagine they would stop the fight and get that checked out. In fact,
how would he communicate that to the ref? The ref would have to...
Well, use the same way you communicate a low blow or a broken
point
leg.
To his jaw? Like,
yeah.
I wouldn't know how to react to that if I was a ref.
First of all,
is he pointing?
If your mouthpiece fell out, if you had a locked jaw, your mouthpiece would probably fall out.
And not necessarily. It's like, it's really fast. It's molded to fit your teeth.
Yeah, that's true. That's a very terrifying thing, but you know, I'm sure it could happen. What are you doing opening your mouth anyway?
In
the middle of a fight.
You're kind of asking for it. Tajiri counters a double underhook suplex, misses a kick to the head, and then takes the double underhook powerbomb from Regal, who gets this win 2 minutes and 59 seconds. And after the match, Regal delivers another underhook powerbomb, and Torrey runs down, and she gets hit with a double underhook powerbomb. and I think Regal killed her here.
Yes. You know, I guess
Tori was not built for big bumps.
She's not, no. You know, like, I mean, a lot of these girls have actual muscle mass, but some of these girls just can't do it. But that was fine. This was decent heat on Regal, I guess. Attack the Woman. I thought this match was way too short, though. I was a huge fan of Tajiri at this time and would have liked to have seen a more competitive, longer matchup.
We get a video for the Edge versus Test match coming up, and they show Test posing in a mirror, and he complains about the lotion being rubbed on him by one of the backstage assistants, mm-hmm. Jan. And then he hits on Stacy Keibler. He says, why don't we go out later and partay? One of the stupidest words to ever come out of this era of time.
Partay? Okay.
Let's go partay.
Might have been a 90s term, actually.
It was a late 90s term that I hated. And Stacy walks off by caressing Test's ass.
Talk about subtlety. How do we show that she's interested?
Rub his ass. And then they can go partay. And these two would legitimately hook up right around this time.
Were they not already hooked up at this time?
I don't know.
I think they were, right? Was this the start of the testicles?
No, that didn't happen until later. Okay. Like much later, because Test still had to do all the un-American stuff the following year, and then he'd become a testicle. Jonathan Coachman is with Edge. He compares Test and Edge, and Edge says, yes, they do both have long blonde hair, unique first names, but Test has been dumped by every girl on the planet. And tonight, he's not going to get hit by the big boot, but instead, Test is going to say, I lost. What's that all about?
Ooh.
This was John Cena-level bad comedy.
It really was. Not to mention that he's Canadian himself, so where's the insult?
Yeah. So, Edge and Test for the United States and Intercontinental title. Unification match. So Edge has the WCW title and Test has the WWF one. Test has never worked in WCW, but Test defected to the Alliance. Got that? Actually, Edge has had more WCW matches.
Yeah. Yeah, he has.
Heyman notes that Greensboro was the birthplace of the United States title. And throughout the show for these unification matches, he would run down prior lists of champions.
Heyman worked his ass off trying to put over the importance of this unification belt, the lineage that one of these titles would end tonight.
I rarely have any issues with Paul Heyman on commentary, but I found in this show, maybe it's just watching it in hindsight, like it was just like not even Heyman was trying to acknowledge that this was a serious.
He really tried his best.
I thought he did it to a comedic point.
That's true.
When he talks, I thought it was like over the top of, well, tomorrow night's going to be the Alliance Raw. Maybe we'll give you a job, JR. And it was just like, come on. This is so tongue-in-cheek, I found. It was just, it was the only time I didn't really enjoy Ross and Heyman during this period.
I agree with you. He doesn't seem to know when to turn off the comedy and when to. Well, I don't know if he intends to be a comedic. I think maybe part of him does, but maybe it's just the way his voice sounds.
Yeah. And someone posted this on the feedback. It was that Heyman probably sold this show better than anyone with that promo on SmackDown on mm-hmm. Vince. I mean, that was one of the greatest promos, I would say, in SmackDown history, mm-hmm. And one of the best over the past 10 years. Mm-hmm. So we go into the match here, and Test wears down Edge and gets the heat. Test misses Edge in the corner and takes a drop kick off the turnbuckle. Both guys, I thought, were working very hard here. Test blocked a sunset powerbomb attempt off the turnbuckle, and then he jumps off the turnbuckle and takes a drop kick from Edge. Both get to their feet. We see a spinning heel kick and a face plant by Edge. He blocks a pump handle slam and comes back with the compactor for a two count. Then Test hits a spear for a two count, and this seemed to be when the crowd really picked up as they worked into the near falls. Edge ducked the big boot, then missed a spear to Edge, Test did. Test goes for the pump handle slam, but only gets a two count. Then Edge counters a power bomb with a Hurricane Rana and spears Test for a two count. Crowd really into the match at this point. And then Test blocks an implant DDT. He goes for a suplex, but Edge blocks and rolls up Test. 11 minutes and 18 seconds. And I remember this match got high praise at the time, and this was probably the best match of Test's career.
It probably was. This, as you mentioned, the near falls when they started to pick up. This is when this match started to really shine, and it was really good, actually, between these two.
They did, because I had the VHS here from the original pay-per-view airing, and they had the pay-per-view commercials here. And this month on Fanatics was the Hardys' Leap of Faith VHS. And Jeff was asked to describe himself in one word, and he said, weird. Stephanie is in the locker room, and Kurt Angle walks in. She's worried that no one is getting along, and Tess just lost. And she's worried that she will become a regular person if they lose tonight, and will have to do menial tasks, like cleaning. Angle says, you are special, and I feel Austin is telling the truth, and I promise you, Austin won't screw them. Which was a little foreboding here from Angle.
Huh, a little.
Yes. Lita is with Jeff in the back and is worried about Matt. Says that Matt's been acting weird lately. And then Matt walks in. He says everyone should be acting strange because they could be out of jobs. And they get ready for their match, and then Lita leaves, and Trish walks in. And Trish wishes Lita good luck tonight in her match.
Trish walks in from Matt's locker room.
Yes, that's right.
That was the implication.
Oh, so we were teasing here. Didn't even pick up on that.
Yeah, well... Yeah.
Does Matt have his own locker room?
It was the WWE locker room.
Oh, okay.
But the girls wouldn't be there with the guys.
Maybe they're a team. They're Team WWF.
Okay.
They all changed together and...
Well, then I have no idea what this whole segment was about then.
Next up, the Dudley Boys with Stacy Keibler taking on the Hardys in a tag title unification steel cage match. And they lay all four titles on the ground to start the match, as Heyman runs down the prior champions for each company. Hardy started wrestling with a baseball cap. This was his period where I think he was trying every time out to see how long his baseball cap could stay on in a match.
Right. And then we had the rag in his back pocket era.
Yes. Well, you never know when you're going to need a rag. Could get, like, something on your hands or...
in your nose.
You got to be prepared. Yeah. Hardy runs into a Uranagi early on by Bubba Ray. They get the heat on Matt with repeated elbow drops, and then they make frequent tags, build up to a hot tag for Jeff. Then all four come in. They start climbing. Matt hits a Russian leg sweep to Devon, and Bubba hits a Bubba bomb to Jeff off the top ropes. And then the Dudleys hit a flapjack to Matt into the cage, and then Jeff gets tossed into the cage, but he grabs on and starts to climb and gets a huge pop as he goes to climb the cage. But then they grab his leg, and Ross compares him to a North Carolina orangutan.
Huh. Never seen one.
Nope, neither have I. Matt goes face first into the cage. Devon gets Irish whipped into him as well, and then Bubba splashes Matt into the cage. Devon misses the diving headbutt, and then Bubba comes off with a senton to Matt off the top. And we go towards Bubba calls for the tables, and this is when Stacy walks over to the referee Nick Patrick, and she somehow has to get the key to the cage door, so she lifted her skirt, revealing her thong, to the referee, and the referee said, okay, here's the key, and she got a table and put it into the cage.
They at least made it look like she reached around him to grab them. But
then he just stood there as she opened the door.
I'm not sure who was in charge of writing at this time, but the roles for women on the show were just ridiculous. They're so stupid.
What are you talking about? Stacy was her role was to be sexual.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. All right, and it worked.
She did it well here.
A very strong woman.
So, yeah, strong, powerful, What's the phrase they give to the divas these days? Strong, sexy, and powerful.
Yeah.
So Stacy gets a table into the ring, and they put the table in, but the Hardys block a 3D attempt onto them. Matt climbs to the top of the cage and punches Bubba Ray off of him, and Matt goes to the floor. Now, this kind of was strange for a tag match in a cage. You can win by escaping, but you both have to escape. So Matt accomplished something here. He escaped, but by doing so, leaves his partner in a handicapped situation.
Mm-hmm.
So it really, there's no advantage to leaving early. You guys either leave together or you stay in the match.
But there is the advantage if you think your partner is strong enough to be able to get out of there in time.
Well, it's a two-on-one situation.
Okay, but what if one of the other opponents was very weak?
Two people.
But even in this match, Jeff had the chance to leave. He could have won.
That is true. Jeff was left in there, and D-Von repeatedly gets thrown into the cage by Jeff. And Jeff sets up a table, and after ramming D-Von's head three times into the cage, D-Von stumbled around standing, and then just his legs gave out, and he just landed on his back onto the table. Just the table was perfectly positioned for D-Von to just have no more strength to move and just had to lie down on this table.
Actually, I think he was laying down on the ground and somehow fell up.
We got second wind,
yeah.
But then it disappeared.
Why would he land? He just wanted a platform to rest himself?
Maybe.
He wanted the breeze from...
Maybe his back was out, because sometimes they want you to get onto a flat surface and correct your back if you have issues.
Maybe he thought he was at a chiropractor's.
Could have been.
Instinctively got on top of the table.
So Jeff climbs to the top of the cage. He looks down at Matt on the floor, but then he looks at D-Von in his perfectly positioned horizontal state.
Maybe that's what D-Von was thinking. I'm going to tease this guy because I know he can't.
This fucker cannot resist the pop. Maybe this is heavy psychology here on D-Von's part. So Jeff decides rather than keep his job and the titles, he dives off with a swanton onto D-Von. D-Von gets out of the way and Jeff crashes through the table and Bubba pins Jeff at 15 minutes and 45 seconds. I will say this absolutely stupid on Jeff's behalf here, but that was the storyline here, was that he could not resist the pop here, and this would lead to Matt and Jeff's breakup, and justifiably so.
Yeah, justifiably so, absolutely. I thought this was a good match. I thought this cage match was different from typical cage matches in that they carried these two teams with them the same type of creativity that they employed with their TLC matches, their tables matches.
Yeah. So it's very tough at this point because you'd seen everything with these four.
Yes.
That it's very hard to reinvent the wheel when it comes to matches here. And a cage match, just by the nature of it, it's going to restrict you rather than give you more options when it comes to clever and creative spots with tables and going around the arena.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, this match was fine. And the finish, yes, psychology-wise, stupid on Jeff's behalf, but that was the storyline here that they would play up. Jeff got tended to after the match. He was helped out of the ring and taken out on a stretcher. And then we go to WWF New York, where Mick Foley is in attendance, and they ask him why he isn't at the pay-per-view. And he said, yes, I would rather be in Greensboro than here at this dump. And I'm the WWF commissioner. And if the commissioner role has any kind of weight, then I should be at the Survivor Series. So being the commissioner is kind of a joke. And he says, I've worked with both companies, but I'll be pulling for the WWF tonight. And if the WWF wins, I'm going to be going to Charlotte tomorrow morning to have some choice words for Vince McMahon. And this was one of the many endings of the relationship between Vince and Mick at this point, where they would have a long hiatus. And then we see Scotty Too Hotty in the back running steps, and Test walks by and asks him if he wants to go out and partay. And also says, are you in the Immunity Battle Royal next? Scotty says, don't you watch our programming? And then Test lays out Scotty and walks off. More subtlety. Test is taking Scotty's spot in the immunity battle royal.
Yeah. It's an interesting world that they've created.
Yep, we had the first annual Velocity Immunity Battle Royal with Justin Credible, Lance Storm, Raven, Billy Kidman, The Hurricane, Sean Stasiak, Tommy Dreamer, Steven Richards, the APA, Crash Holly, Funaki, Perry Saturn, Elbert, Billy Gunn, Taz, Chuck Palumbo, Spike Dudley, and Diamond Dallas Page.
There you go. Your former three-time?
Shane McMahon got a spot in the main event, but DDP, a guy who canceled his guaranteed contract with WCW to come to this company, found himself in the Immunity Battle Royal and didn't even get immunity.
He didn't even last in the final four.
Horrible descent for this guy.
Yeah.
Sean Stasiak did the comedy elimination. He ran across the ring and was eliminated technically before the bell even rung. And Taz shows up, and Heyman's in shock here. They must have done something on TV with him where they played up Taz doesn't have allegiance to either side.
Mm-hmm. He defected.
The lone wolf.
Yes.
Hurricane gets knocked out by a Bradshaw lariat. Saturn's dumped out by a press slam by Elbert. And then Farouk was dumped out. DDP was simply leaning over the ropes, and Chuck Palumbo came and pushed. He shoved the former multiple-time WCW champion, eliminating Page early on. Then Hugh Morris and Chavo Guerrero run in, and they explained that they were fired by the Alliance. They just ran in.
Yeah, I didn't get that. I wasn't paying attention to the storylines, so I don't remember.
Raven was dumped out. Spike was eliminated by Lance. Bradshaw eliminated Richards. Taz comes over and yells at Heyman, and then Gunn comes from behind and eliminates Taz. Bradshaw hit a fallaway slam, sending Kidman over the top rope backwards and landing on the floor.
Mm-hmm.
Very dangerous looking spot where Kidman had no control over his landing. And it comes down to Test, Lance Storm, Bradshaw, and Billy Gunn. And Bradshaw hits the big boot to Storm, then loses his balance and falls over. Test eliminates Storm and Bradshaw, and then he misses a big boot to Billy Gunn. Came down to Test and Billy Gunn. And then Billy Gunn teases the rocker dropper, but Test hits the big boot and eliminates Billy Gunn. So Test getting the big push on this show, has one of his best matches ever, and then wins the Immunity Battle Royal. So for 1 year, Test will be around.
Yeah, 1 year. Well, big night for him. I thought Heyman and Jim Ross were very entertaining together here, but you're right, though. It came off comedic at times, but it was entertaining for me.
Then we went to this montage video. I had switched and was watching an online version at this point, so I didn't know what this was. And it was just this huge montage done to production music. And I was like, what is this?
Yeah. I didn't know either. This was a music video.
It was the My Sacrifice video.
No, it wasn't.
I'm pretty sure it was.
That's not what I got.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I got a different video. It was in Set the Creed.
Yeah, they took this and put production music under it, but it was all the it was the video montage minus the song. They put a different song on the DVD release.
It's probably the same footage, but it wasn't edited the same way.
Well, I think this, because someone noted it on the feedback that the
this was just a My Sacrifice video, but with different music.
It was a Desire video, yeah.
Hmm, weird.
And I don't know why you would even leave it on the release if you're just putting. It's just a random montage. Why don't you just cut this out?
Yeah, I don't know. I didn't get it.
So Shane McMahon is in the back with Booker T. Booker doesn't trust Austin, but Shane does. Awesome.
Yeah.
Well, let's make sure we have time for this on the show. And then we get a six-pack challenge for the vacant women's title, which had been vacant since China left the company earlier that year. And we've got Trish Stratus, Jacqueline, Lita, Ivory, Mighty Molly, and a mystery entrant. And we cue up the music, and Jazz comes out. Zero reaction. No one knew who she was, but Paul Heyman was determined to get this woman over.
Uh-huh.
So he did I thought he did a great job.
No vignettes, no promos. The one device there. Relying on to get this woman over
is Paul Heyman.
Paul Heyman.
Imagine Lawler was in this spot.
Oh, wow. Oh, man. He would just make fun of her.
Who? Where's
She looks old.
Jazz? Like the music? Where's her partner, classical? All right. She comes in. She tackles Lita to start. And it's the first one to have a pinfall or submission wins the match and the title. I thought Jacqueline looked pretty good in here.
I did too.
Very fast. All her moves were crisp.
I thought she was anchoring a lot of these short tags.
You had some really good women in here. You had like Ivory, Molly, Jazz. Trish was, she wasn't at the level she would eventually get to at this point. This was like her first push. Mm-hmm. Jacqueline you also had in there. Lita was fine for a high spot here or there. But overall, you had, you know, four very solid, you know, solid women in there.
Wrestlers,
and Trish and Lita were very over. So a good mix in here. Jacqueline was working with Molly, then Ivory, very quick exchange of near falls. Stratus got a good reaction when she was tagged in, and then everyone just got into the ring and started fighting. Lita and Jackie did a double team poetry in motion, and then they went for it again, but this time Jackie got up from all fours and just clotheslined Lita, and then hit a somersault. Molly hit a somersault off the top onto Jackie. We saw a twist of fate by Lita to Ivory, and then a moonsault, but Jazz broke up the cover. Trish goes for the Stratus faction on Ivory after all the other women fight to the floor, and she nearly botched it here on Ivory. She almost missed the ropes, and they kind of just did the audible where Ivory flipped Stratus over. She landed on her feet, went for the Stratus faction again, and pinned Ivory at 4 minutes and 24 seconds, and this was Trish's first women's title she would win.
Yeah.
And this was like the start of the women's division with Finley working with the women a lot. I know Lance worked a lot with the women, but this was kind of Trish took this very seriously when she won the title, and her improvement just 6 months after this event was very, very evident.
Yes, yes, absolutely.
So after the match, Heyman asks Ross if he wants a hug because the WWF is about to go out of business, and says that Jim Ross is replaceable. And then Vince is in the back with Team WWF, The Undertaker, Kane, Big Show, Chris Jericho, and The Rock, and says, I could be looking at a group of losers. No fan would ever forgive you. You would be ridiculed by your peers and your family members if you lost this match. And he mentions past legends that have died, looking at each person as he transitions, mentioning Buddy Rogers, Dr. Jerry Graham, Gorilla Monsoon, Andre the Giant, and finally, looking at The Rock, he mentions the High Chief, Peter Maivia. So Vince was doing the Vince Lombardi pep rally here. And then he talks about Austin coming over. He says that's BS. Tonight they're going to honor the WWF. And we go to a video setting up the match with the whole setup of Vince's challenge for the winner-take-all match. They show Kurt Angle turning on the WWF. Jericho and Rock feuding throughout this time, but they're going to team on this night. Vince saying that Austin is going to join Team WWF to create paranoia, and this was all done to the Puddle of Mud song Control, which was the theme song for this pay-per-view.
Mm-hmm.
So there we go. This was the setup for the biggest match in history, way
of all time. Yes, featuring Shane McMahon.
One of the longest WWF pay-per-view history. Ross tells Heyman early on that he could have Jim Cornette come and replace him tomorrow, and says Heyman's going to have to go live with his parents, which he already did. He said, or Ross said, I'm not going to have to go move home with my parents. So these two, they were very entertaining with taking jabs at one another.
Mm-hmm.
So here we go. It's the Alliance. It's Austin, Booker, Kurt Angle, RVD, and Shane McMahon against The Rock, Undertaker, Kane, Jericho, and Big Show. And we won't go through everything here. This match was a marathon. And they started off really hot with Rock and Austin getting the crowd into things right away. And the momentum for me stopped because every time the babyfaces had the heat and they were going for a cover, it would be Shane McMahon running in to break things up. Shane McMahon was just so annoying in this match. He had no place in this at all.
Everybody groaned when they found out Shane was in here. I think the rumor was that Vince wanted to be in this match as well. And at the last minute, they replaced him with Big Show after they realized how stupid of an idea that would have been.
I remember everyone hated this when Shane was added because I think originally They might have had somebody else in. I can't remember. But anyway, they did the angle and put Shane in. And it was just, you think it's lame now. It was just as lame back then. Mm-hmm. I think some people have these, like, fond memories of Shane McMahon. And it's, I think a lot of that is just hindsight and...
And high spots.
Yeah, exactly. Hindsight and high spots. The career of Shane McMahon. Lots of heat when Rob Van Dam got tagged in.
Mm-hmm.
Man, was this guy over at this time.
He was over, and I found Austin was still very over as a babyface at this point,
yes,
too. People wanted to cheer Austin.
Angle and Kane get in, and they play up that Kane tapped for the first time ever recently on a television match with Angle. Shane continually runs in to break the covers, and... If you thought this was getting heat to build up for a spot, I would say you were wrong here. It was just annoying. You just wanted him out of this match, but not in the kind of way where you're engaged in this guy as a heel. Big Show comes in, clears everybody away, teases a choke slam, but ends up taking an angle slam from Kurt. Booker comes in, hits Show with the scissors kick, then RVD hits him with the frog splash, and Shane McMahon hits the top rope elbow drop, and Shane McMahon pins the Big Show at 12 minutes and 40 seconds.
Yeah.
They thought very highly of Big Show here. So Rock comes in with Shane and then tags Kane, who comes and chokeslams Shane. Undertaker hits Shane with a tombstone, and then Jericho pins Shane after a lion salt at 14 minutes and 30 seconds. So we're down to 4-on-4. Next elimination was RVD pinning Kane at the 18:20 mark after RVD delivered a frog splash, and then there were a series of run-ins. The Undertaker comes in, hits Angle with the last ride, and stops Booker, who had a chair, but then he takes a stunner from Austin, and Austin carries Kurt over and puts him on top of the Undertaker, so the Undertaker gets eliminated, 20 minutes and 2 seconds. And then The Rock rolls up Booker after a long selling spot just out of nowhere to eliminate Booker. Van Dam leaps to the top and gets dropped by Rock with a roll-up for a 2 count. Jericho comes in, hits a faceplant to RVD. He was calling this something at the time. He was trying to introduce this as a new finish for him.
Are you talking about the stroke? Like what?
Yeah, like a version of the stroke. Yeah. I can't remember what he called this, but he eliminated Van Dam with it at 24 minutes and 40 seconds. So it's down to Rock and Jericho against Austin and Angle.
Mm-hmm.
This is the end of WWF and WCW. Down to Austin and Angle representing the Mid-Atlantic Georgia Championship Wrestling lineage. Austin runs Rock into the ring post on the floor as Angle wears down Jericho in the ring. Jericho rolls through and attempts an ankle lock of his own on Kurt, but gets cut off by a Angle clothesline after he rolls out. Jericho makes the hot tag to Rock, who comes in with Angle. Rock and Angle just had such amazing chemistry.
Mm-hmm.
He goes for the sharpshooter on Kurt, and Kurt Angle taps out to the sharpshooter. 31 minutes and 52 seconds. And then Austin attacks Rock, but Rock tags in Jericho. Austin's bleeding from the mouth badly at this point. Austin goes for the walls of Jericho onto Chris, but he blocks it. And Austin gets his knees up for a lion salt. And Austin ends up pinning Jericho at 34 minutes and 34 seconds. So it comes down to Austin and Rock, the rematch from WrestleMania earlier this year. And Jericho runs in after he's eliminated, and he delivers the stroke maneuver to The Rock, leaves him laying, and everyone's upset at Jericho here for attacking The Rock.
And this is because the two of them were working an angle prior to this, some type of just, you know, they hate each other.
But why would you want to cost yourself your own job here?
He forgot. He was blinded because he hates The Rock so much.
Well, didn't even matter here. Jericho here, the dastardly heel, hits his finish, but Rock kicks out of it as Austin goes to pin him. So then the Undertaker comes down the ramp, and he gets so mad that he points his finger at Jericho and shoos him to the back. What are you doing? What are you doing?
I thought that was fun. I thought this was a nice side story here.
Austin gets the heat here. He gets into the face of Earl Hebner, but then Rock starts his comeback. But then he gets tossed over the top rope to the floor and starts selling his knee. And they fight on the floor back and forth. Austin gets tossed into the Spanish announce table, and Rock dives onto him. Austin applies the sharpshooter, and Heyman is yelling, "Tap, movie star!" and saying that that Hebner should do what he does best, call for the bell when the sharpshooter's applied.
At Survivor Series.
Yes. But Rock reaches the ropes. Austin then grabs the title. He misses The Rock and takes a spine buster, and Rock applies the sharpshooter But Austin gets the ropes again. Rock pulls him into the middle with the sharpshooter, but again gets out of it. Rock blocks a stunner, hits his own stunner onto Austin, and then Nick Patrick runs out and pulls Earl Hebner out, and he goes for the cover. Rock then goes for the rock bottom. Austin stops him, and Austin hits a rock bottom. But Rock then kicks out as Nick Patrick counts. Austin gets mad here at Nick Patrick, and Austin is the one that decks Nick Patrick, opting instead to pull in the WWF referee, Earl Hebner, to finish the match. Rock shoves Austin into Hebner. They go back and forth. Austin hits the stunner, but Earl Hebner is out. And then Kurt Angle runs in. He grabs the title, and Kurt Angle decks Austin.
Mm-hmm.
So for 32 minutes, Kurt Angle fought for the Alliance, but here he had a change of heart. But that's okay, because he'd have another change of heart by the next night. And it leads to a rock bottom for the win. 44 minutes and 48 seconds this match went. So Rock gets the pin on Austin with the assist from Kurt Angle. And Ross tells Heyman, "You're out of work again." Stephanie in the back does her ridiculous overacting as they show Jazz seated next to her, hunched over, weeping, and probably wondering why she didn't wait one more day to debut with the winning company.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I would have done. They also showed Lance's reaction. They had the whole locker room, and Lance just had his mouth open, like he had locked his jaw at this reaction. And the show finishes with Rock posing, and Vince comes out, tosses his jacket down, and lifts his arms in victory.
Closing shot.
I've won, goddammit.
He killed WCW. Well, that's the show.
I hated the booking of this main event. It was so overbooked. It made so little sense. All the ref bumps, all the run-ins, I did not like this. Very well worked. The guys in the ring I didn't have a problem with, but the booking was horrible. It was a perfect end for this horrible invasion angle, I thought. No emotion for the end of it, and the telling part was that every single member of that WCW Alliance locker room was with that company. No one left. There were no consequences. It was a poorly executed storyline, and one of the greatest blunders, I think, in wrestling history. That's what I thought.
Wow. You said it all, John. That might as well be the definitive analysis of this.
I give this show a 2.5 out of 10, actually. Because
wow.
This show, more than any other, was so sold on storyline. This show was all about storyline, and it failed on every level in this show. And yes, great...
Hold on a second. What were you expecting for this storyline? How do you expect them to tie this mess up?
I'm saying they got themselves into this mess, and this was the payoff, and it was a shit payoff. So I'm not going to reward them because they did such a bad job that... the end was going to be horrible.
Okay.
I couldn't enjoy this. And there were zero consequences to these steps of what was promoted as the most important pay-per-view in wrestling history at the start of this show.
Sure.
The booking of the main event was just... I hated the final 10 minutes.
Yeah, yeah. I didn't think it was awful. I mean, ref bumps are nothing.
So cliched. And even Austin, why would he deck... the Nick Patrick, his Alliance referee,
because he wasn't counting fast enough.
Well, that made no sense, because Nick Patrick saved him. He pulled Earl Hebner out when Rock had Austin beat. He was helping him.
Anyway, I'm not going to try to explain the mindset of a fictitious character right now, but I thought the work rate was overall good on this show. I didn't think there were any terrible matches. It's just looking at it from a work rate standpoint.
It was a very good show.
I thought it was fine.
I can't give a passing grade to this show because of the surrounding circumstances.
Well, I guess we're just judging things kind of differently. I give this a 6 out of 10 because the work was okay, and this was... they already had a pile of shit in front of them, and they did their best to clean it up, and, you know, this is what we got.
I would argue they didn't do a very good job cleaning it up.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's what we thought about the 2001 Survivor Series. And now we are going to welcome someone who was on this card way, Trish Stratus. She's going to be holding her open house at Stratosphere Yoga. Her brand new DVDs are now available in stores, so they're having an open house to celebrate that. And we're going to chat about her very first women's title win.
He has got a low bridge there by Trish. isolated with Trish. And Trish able to land on her feet. And Trish, oh, the satisfaction of the pelvic. And Trish has done it. Trish Stratus has won this match.
The winner of this bout, and new World Wrestling Federation Women's Champion, Trish Stratus.
Well, the WWF Trish Stratus, certainly not a favorite going into this matchup, able to win the contest with a decisive use of the Stratus faction on Ivory, and Trish Stratus is the new women's champion.
All right, we are back here on Review Away, and we've got some star power here, Away, joining us here on the show. Trish Stratus is with us, and lots of stuff to talk about with Trish. The most important of which, Trish, is that you have a new line of DVDs out, and you're going to be having an open house, I understand, this Saturday.
Yes, I'm having my official DVD release party, and I'm launching my products. It's a line of yoga and fitness products, and we launched across Canada, so that's kind of been, it's been trickling across Canada for the last month or so. So it's in retailers like Home Outfitters and Sears and Sport Check, and so it's pretty exciting. And then we're finally launching it at the studio in Vaughan, so it's a big deal, and we're really excited about it.
Now, Trish, for people like myself and John and people who listen to our podcast, is this DVD for people like us? Would we be able to, learn and do these postures?
Of course, I will teach you, young grasshopper. Yoga, obviously, I think everyone knows the story of this. I discovered it during wrestling, and it's something that's really stuck with me. And yoga is, the cool thing about yoga is it's so versatile. It really is one of those workouts that just about everybody can do, and it's a matter of doing it at your own pace. And I took yoga to a kind of a different level. I sort of went back to my fitness roots and found a way to take yoga, because it was more about just, you know, people are like, isn't yoga just stretching? But it kind of can be a great conditioning tool, and I found utilizing it to be a better athlete and to perform better is kind of how I've kind of gone with it. So I kind of took the yoga and made it a little bit more fitness approach with it. I created these gloves called, they're pretty awesome actually. They're called my Fit Gloves. So when you do your yoga, now you have this 1 pound weight on your hand, and it makes it more fitness, and you can go to the gun show with this, you see, which is very important. Do you guys want tickets to the gun show, or are you guys okay?
We have not made it to the gun show ever, I think, in our lives.
We're banned.
Well, my Stratus for Yoga DVD with the Fit Gloves, I guarantee you will have tickets, maybe not front row or anything, but you will have tickets to the gun show, and I can get you there.
Because we're in the peanut gallery, I think, at this point of the gun show. We'd like to get a better view, Trish, and maybe you can be the person that gets us better seats.
Well, I think you should. I think we need to get you a copy of this DVD, and you need to try and get your sweat on, and we'll get you there.
So, are there kind of like different levels in terms of the DVDs? Are they kind of geared for beginner based? I mean, if you're kind of advanced and have a more knowledge base, will this be something as well that that will be for whatever range you are when it comes to yoga?
Yeah, for sure. It's one of those things where yoga is just like a pile of moves that is like, you know, you kind of put them into a certain sequence, and it's the challenge becomes, you know, kind of the endurance. So the longer you do it, the more it takes out of you, more stamina is required, and some of the poses are a little bit more difficult. I've chosen very accessible poses, and yeah, you're going to have like those awkward moments, but you're kind of in your living room, so it's okay. You don't mind if your warrior is like way off, because you'll watch me and I'll tell you how to properly get into your warrior, you know, which is a yoga move, by the way. But it's one of those things where I kind of split it up into 10-minute blocks, because I say to people, like, you know, give it a whirl, try 10 minutes, see if, like, you know, get used to the movement, because I kind of move pretty quickly. I'm like, I don't mess around. I'm like, let's work out. You have 50 minutes with me today. Let's do this kind of thing. So I expect you kind of just to get into it. But it's like, if you do 10 minutes of the section, you're still getting a great workout out of it. You're learning the moves while you do it. And then the more you do it, it just becomes more natural. Your body kind of, you know, picks up on the muscle memory and your body awareness. And next thing you know, you are a full-blown yogi.
All right. Well, I have a bit of a challenge here, Trish, because here on this podcast every week, me and Wei, we review like a classic wrestling event here on this podcast, and we take feedback from people. And we're wondering if we can get one of these DVDs, could we possibly do the first ever video edition of Review Away, where maybe we go through one of these DVDs with you kind of guiding us through this?
I love it. Let's do it.
I think that's the next step for us, Wei.
And then we'll monitor your progress.
Yes, I think that would be the key, where we start and where we finish. Because, you know what, maybe me and Wei have some potential that we're just not tapping into yet.
Well, most people actually don't go into their first yoga class because they think they're going to look like an idiot and they think they can't do it. But my first yoga class, I was in the front of a room. Of course, I went there trying to rehabilitate my back. I thought, this is not a real workout. This is just to try and make me feel better. And there was a 60-year-old man behind me doing the poses that I couldn't do. And I was like, wow. So it's very humbling. And you have to realize it's okay. It's your own practice. Sometimes you can do things. Sometimes you can't. But you have to stick with it. And then all of a sudden your body goes, yeah, okay, I got this. It takes some time, but you'll get there. So, yeah, I accept the challenge, if you accept the challenge. And I'm going to give you a stratosphere fit test. I'm going to see where you're at, and we'll make you strong like a bull.
Well, I can tell you, Trish, I know you know from experience that I'm actually very experienced in yoga. And in fact, I'm probably amazing. So, John...
On the other hand, I've done a class with Trish, and I actually crashed into Trish, and she laughed at me. I did not have such a successful debut, but I'm willing to learn, Trish. I'm all in here.
I've actually seen both of your debuts, though.
Yes.
And this is definitely a good starting point. Now, have we done yoga since we both started first off, or no?
We've watched it online.
Been busy.
Okay.
Yeah, so a bit of rust, Trish, but as you showed at WrestleMania earlier this year, I mean, you got right back into things without any problems, so I'm hoping I can have the same transition.
Yeah, it's a little bit like riding a bike, almost, sort of, not really, but minus the wheels, mostly, is what you want to think about there. But I think what you need to do is come to my studio ASAP. Let's get you some DVDs. Come on Saturday. Want to come Saturday?
We're going to be there Saturday. Absolutely.
Okay, so the big launch party, I'll have a 2 copies of size, especially for you guys. I'm just going to take it home, do your homework, and then we're going to do a live session, and I'll be there as your nutritional support coach and mentor. And then we will get you on this whole lifestyle kick, and then you're going to see, like, you're going to be way better people, actually.
Wow. Does the nutrition aspect include... energy drinks, Trish?
It can. Do you
tap out energy
good?
Drinks.
You guys, how's your eating habits?
You know what? They're not the best, Trish. And I mean, do you guys kind of specialize in that when it comes to nutrition and maybe putting some plans together? Because I will fully admit, I think I could use some guidance.
I don't want to be pitching things at all times. However, you've given me a perfect segue to talk about my yoga fitness kit. Because honestly, this is one of these things for the last, I'd say, 10 years, and I just aged myself. But I've been giving people advice, and I've been saying, you know, like even my website, since its very beginnings, it always had a nutritional aspect to it and kind of offered people advice and, you know, coming from my fitness world. And so people would say, like, what should I do to work out? What can I do? And it'd be fine. I could tell you what to do to work out. But if you don't eat a certain way, you're not going to see the results that you could possibly see. So I've been, just for years, been kind of handing out these templates, and I've been telling people, listen, I do a food journal. I write everything down just to have some accountability. And this is just little tools and tips that I do along the way that have kind of helped me maintain my fitness career for the last, you know, long time. So, by the way, when I say long time, did you realize I won the title about 10 years ago?
Trish, I gave you a great segue, and you're going to give us a great segue, but I'll let you finish first.
Okay. Anyway, so yes, so what I did is I wanted to, when I put these products together, I wanted to make sure that I delivered a kit, which is a great way to start. So basically the kit has your mat, your DVD, and a nutrition journal, because it'll give you this, like, exactly what to eat, what to not eat, and then it also has a journal where you can record all your eatings, and this will help you get on the right track.
Well, and all our listeners are going to think we are making this up here, but Trish was coming on here, and of course, as we mentioned, we review a classic event each week, and this week, Trish, we are reviewing the 2001 Survivor Series from November the 18th of 2001, where a young Trish Stratus won her very first WWE Women's title, and we want to ask you about that night, because that was a pivotal point in your career where you did win your first title.
Oh, my gosh, absolutely. It was a really shock that I was going to become champion that night. I mean, a number of things. I was certainly the underdog compared to all the other women that were in that match. I was, you know, I guess just the fact that the title was coming back, it was a big deal because it had been vacant at the time. China, I think, was the last champion who left with the title. So it was a big deal, and of course, to me, it meant my career obviously was about to go in a different direction, and it was kind of like, okay. I think to me, it was the, hey, Trish, you know, can you handle this? Will Trish be able to take this ball and run with it? And so I knew I was given a big responsibility by, you know, becoming champion that night. And, now we're suddenly like, okay, we're going to focus on a women's division now. So there, that was the task at hand. Not only the first task at hand was to do amazing and perform well with all these really, you know, more skilled women than I was in the ring, and then also to carry the title after that. So, and it was great. I totally felt like I stepped up to the challenge, and that gave me, that's what I thrive on is challenges. So to be able to be put in that position, you know, I wanted to go out there and obviously make my colleagues proud, but also to go out and, start this new, path of my career. And I'm very happy with the way it went after that.
And that was also, I mean, the same night you won the title, I mean, Jazz made her debut. Finley had come over from WCW at that point. And you can really trace, the history of the women's division over the past, 10 to 12 years. That night was a big turning point, I think, where the women's matches were given a lot more emphasis. And kind of 2002 and 3, I mean, a lot of people regard as that real great glory period where, there was yourself, Victoria, Jazz, Molly. I mean, just it was a tremendous division, and it was no longer just kind of the buffer match that you would throw in between two big title matches. It was its own division that stood up with all the other men.
Yeah, and I think that that night particularly was exactly that. It was kind of like the launching pad for that type of the division that it became, because bringing in these characters like Jazz and just strong women's wrestling, like there was just women that all delivered their own style, and they just were just solid individuals in the ring. They moved well. There wasn't really it was a matter of just building the characters. That's the only element that was missing. And then at that point we had that opportunity to do that. So we had everything kind of going for us, and certainly a big thing was having Finley on board. I remember he was the one who always said, let's try this this bulldog. Let's take it up a notch. And he, kind of presented the springboard bulldog to me. And it was thinking like that of saying, you guys are ready for the next step, and kind of taking all the girls and going, you're used to doing this. The crowd is used to seeing this. Let's take it here now. And it was thinking like that, and us being, open-minded, and all the girls being absolutely willing to take it to the next level and to try new things and to experiment and to be protective of their right, of their moves. Really, it was such a team effort for all of us, and all the work we did like you said, by 2003, I think we put in the work to build this viable division that people really, really loved and were passionate about in the end.
When you first entered the company, Trish, was, being skilled in ring a priority for you?
Oh, for sure. I've always been a tomboy. I would never have gone into wrestling to just be a valet. Like, I wouldn't say, oh, that's what I want to be when I grow up or when I come into WWE. Obviously, I went in with a solid training background. I had, quite a few months of training in under my belt, and I went in there. I wouldn't have had it any other way. I wouldn't have started or even pursued that path if I didn't have that training. And that's what I say to people now, and women who are into it, don't even go there until you're ready to accept the challenge inside the ring as well. And so that was my ultimate goal. It was just a matter of like, when would I be able to showcase these things? I knew that as a performer, where I peak is when I do what I can do athletically. It was a side coincidence that I got to do the performance side of stuff as just being an entertainer as well. But my passion was always to be athletic. And I mean, just my background, just coming from even, my university and varsity, hockey days and things like that, I was always interested in pursuing that. So it was a dream to be able to combine the two. But yeah, that was definitely my ultimate goal, was to become a performer and, of course, be known for that as an athlete.
This show was also the end of the invasion angle, and a lot of the guys have talked about the two locker rooms coming together and a lot of issues. What was it like in the women's locker room? Because it was really just Stacy and Tori coming over. Was it something where there was a certain uneasiness of the two new faces showing up in the locker room, or was everyone kind of – was the women's locker room a lot more cohesive than some of the problems maybe with some of the guys?
I think think it was not bad because, like you said, there was only two of the girls coming over. Personally, I knew both of the girls. I guess I'd met Stacey, but I mean, I'd worked with Tori back in the fitness days. We used to do fitness modeling years and years before that. So it was a comfortable, you know, entrance for those girls. I think there was a bit of a divide. I would say the more veteran girls at the time, like the Debras and, I think, I guess China was China around there?
Maybe
Ivory before, like those girls, and then there was the new crowd, like me and Amy. We were a little bit more accepting of, you know, Stacey and Tori coming in. It was maybe the veteran girls that were giving them a hard time. But that was just like old school wrestling, like let's you know, welcome to our world kind of things. But there was only two girls to deal with, so yeah, it wasn't too bad.
Well, before we let you go, Trish, you've got so much stuff on the go, and the WWE is, by the time you're listening to this, has just released the WWE 12 video game that's being put out by THQ, and you've got a cool contest going on because you are, in fact, a downloadable character in the game.
Yes, my look from WrestleMania with Snooki is part of the game, which is very exciting. And that just got announced recently. People are really excited to hear that, and I'm kind of excited to see, you know, myself face some of these girls that I've never had the opportunity to face. And we're doing a contest with THQ where we're giving out a copy of the game WWE 12, and then we are giving away one of my DVDs, my yoga DVDs, as well as a pair of fit gloves, which are going to be autographed. So we have a huge contest. We have a ton of entries. So there's a skill testing question. So make sure you have your Trishtery, your knowledge all intact when you go there. But go to my Facebook page. It's TrishStratus.com. So just drop the dot. But TrishStratus.com is my Facebook page. Check it out. Enter in the contest. And we're going to be doing that. There's another day. Today is basically the last day to enter and get a copy of that. And it's kind of cool because my yoga line is not available in the States yet. It will be soon. So you'll be one of the first in the United States of America to have that if you are from the States and win this contest. So it's a pretty cool contest.
So go check that out, facebook.com/TrishStratus.com. And TrishStratus.com is also her handle on Twitter. And the open house is happening this Saturday at Stratosphere Yoga, noon till 4 p.m. Come meet Trish Stratus. And who knows, John Pollock and Wei Ting will be there as well.
Get your products and your get your sweat on with Wei Ting and John.
Yeah, exactly.
Right?
Come sweat with us. Wow, I don't want to like chase people away here, Trish. We want to draw them in, so we'll
yeah,
just
yeah. No sweating with them at all.
You're the draw. We're simply just hanging on. Mm-hmm. So we'll finish off though, Trish. But what's going on in WWE land? Any rumblings? Any breaking news? Are we going to be seeing you in the next couple of months?
The number one question, of course, I'm getting is where is Tough Enough 2?
Yes.
I don't know. We're still watching Tough Enough 1 right now on the Fight Network, so that's all we care about. But
does,
I don't know.
It does tremendous numbers. Doing tremendous numbers for us on Fight Network, so lots of
good
feedback.
Yeah, it's a great show, and hopefully there will be a second season. I know that WWE Network is, you know, launching, so perhaps that's what the delay is. I'm not quite sure. Can't confirm or deny. I don't know. We'll see what happens next with me. But right now, though, you can play with me in the video game.
Well, there. That's incentive right there. WWE 12, open house, yoga, all this stuff on the go for Trish Stratus. So thanks very much for taking this time out, and we will see you on Saturday, Trish.
See you then.
So thank you once again to Trish Stratus, and for more information, you can go to TrishStratus.com, and her open house, as Trish mentioned, is going down this Saturday, Stratosphere Yoga, at just by Vaughn Mills.
It's pretty much
you've done a class conference there, haven't you?
I have.
As have I.
In fact, I've filmed it, and we filmed you doing
the class. Oh, that's right. We went together. That's right. It was tough, man. Like, I've done yoga a few times. I've done hot yoga a bunch. It was I felt incredible after I did it my first time.
Yeah, she actually has a special form of yoga. I forget what it's called. But it's like a yoga that kind of combines martial arts movement, and that's what we had you guys try. If you go on YouTube right now, type in Stratosphere Yoga Fight Network, you should see John Pollock in many positions.
Am I on that? Is that online?
Yeah, you are.
Oh, I didn't know that was online.
It's online.
Wow. Always appreciate having Trish on.
Yeah, I'll do my best to try to I might make it out to Saturday as well to this open house.
Yeah, cool. Yeah. And I think Trish will be happy to see you. She's got a thing for you.
Does she?
She likes you.
Maybe she just wants to use me for my camera skills.
No, that's not true. She always makes mention
of
you.
I'm joking.
Everyone loves you.
No, I like.
I'm you know what the turning cool. point was with you? It was when we did that Law 10th anniversary show back in 2007, and she came in studio with us, and we did that office mockumentary on you.
What?
Remember we did that bit where it was like we did it like office style about Wei Ting?
No.
You don't remember this at all?
Oh, yes, I do. I do. Yes, I
will find the audio of this and post it.
Yeah, I do. It's been so long, though.
It was like a biography on Wei Ting, like behind the scenes of what he did at the law. And Trish thought it was amazing.
And I had no part in that. I was all John Pollock. So, well, thank you, John.
You had lots of it. You were the voice.
Honestly, I feel terrible. I don't remember.
Oh, man. All my hard work for nothing. Okay, well, I'm going to hunt down that audio.
Okay.
But let's get into feedback right now. I want to see what everyone else had to say about the Survivor Series 2001. You want to kick things off, Boy?
Let's start off with Blaine Vandergren, who I ran into at the Wild Wing this past weekend.
Lots of people like you.
Doesn't mean he likes me.
No.
I just ran into him. In fact...
What's Blaine saying?
Well, quick story.
I meant that, not let's get to his feedback. I mean,
I didn't really have a conversation. He was there with his friends. I was there with my friends. So.
Oh, it was a standoff.
It was a standoff. I was at the Wild Wing here to watch the UFC, and I enter a raffle, and I won the raffle.
Wow.
I won a UFC hat, an extra large UFC t-shirt.
Oh, perfect.
And a DVD.
Well, congratulations. What DVD did you win?
Tito Ortiz versus Forrest Griffin 2.
Oh, the one from, that was November 2010.
Was it? Completely forgettable event in my eyes.
It wasn't a very good fight.
Were you sure it was? I don't know if it was 2010.
Could have been 2009, actually, that fight. Yeah, that one was 2009.
Anyway.
Yes, that would have been right.
I never won anything, so that was a good time.
Excellent.
And Blaine says, this was essentially a one-match show. I remember that the bulk of the card was filled out on Raw before the pay-per-view. While I didn't care for the fact that the WCW stars all became supporting players by then, I did like the angles going into the big elimination match where everyone was paranoid that certain people would turn. I was in grade 12 at the time, and I remember even talking with my friends about this match and how we would book the finish. I heard at one point there was talk of having Vince and Shane as the last two team members to settle it, but then the last two wrestlers in the match ended up being the top two WWE stars, which had nothing to do with the ECW-WCW invasion.
I'll take Rock Austin over Vince Shane to end that.
Would have been symbolic.
No, it wouldn't have been. How is Shane any closer to WCW than Austin was?
I agree.
Alexander Rios, for the not-so-good Survivor Series and the end of the most pathetic attempt of what was supposed to be the greatest storyline of all time, I really enjoyed this show, so much that I actually tried to find a DVD of it on eBay. Then when I saw it was WWE Survivor Series 2001, not WWF, I downloaded the torrent of the uncensored ones. Sorry, but blurred-out Attitude Era logos are annoying to me. Anyway, on to the actual show. Despite its flaws, I enjoyed it. In fact, I enjoyed it so much I went to YouTube to watch the famous Paul Heyman shoot leading up to it. From Jazz's debut to the Hardys-Dudleys' last hurrah in a cage match for the Unified Tag Titles to the Immunity Battle Royal, even though Test ended to with less than nothing from this stipulation... And that 10-man Survivor Series match, talk about star power. Angle, Jericho, Undertaker, Kane, Big Show, Austin, and The Rock. Now that is how you put a Survivor Series match together. And am I alone in saying that I love the commentary with Jim Ross and Paul Heyman? Compared to Cole and Lawler and or Booker T today, those guys should watch this show just to get an education, especially Vince himself. Truly love this show. If I were to rate it, I would say 8 out of 10. P.S. John and Way, if you guys ever run short on ideas for reviews, feel free to ring me up. I have plenty of suggestions.
We'll do that.
Okay.
Mark Cardoso. The Death of WCW book by Artie Reynolds said it right. The fate of WCW and WWF were in the hands of Stone Cold and The Rock. Kurt Angle never wrestled in WCW. Joining the group prior made no sense. Funny how WWF said they could not afford the big-name contracts, but ended up bringing them in after the event.
Thulani, truly a one-match show. With an obvious outcome, the fact that WWF had failed to get a TV slot for WCW, in addition to how weak WCW and ECW talent were booked, meant it was always clear that regardless of the outcome of the match, the WWF brand was always going to remain intact, even if the alliance had gone over. They weren't going to rebrand Raw into Nitro the next night. The traitor angle was totally backwards. Shouldn't it have been Shane and Steph who had a mole in Team WWF?
Is that it?
No, that's the old phone. I hate that phone. It's not supposed to get any rings.
Weird.
This is the new phone.
Huh.
This is the one they call it.
Why is that one still plugged in? And the phone lines work?
That one does. This one doesn't even have a cable to it.
Weird.
We should give that away at the MMA Expo, the old phone. Okay. Thanks for interrupting us. All right. Back to here. We are on Thulani. Even if the alliance had gone over, they weren't going to rebrand Raw to Nitro the next night. The traitor angle was totally backwards. Shouldn't it have been Shane and Steph who had a mole in Team WWF? Anyway, who cares? This angle was fucked up from day one. As was the case with all pay-per-views from this era. The in-ring work was great, even when a match was just meant to be a time filler. The main event was great. I can't believe I'm saying this, but I think it would have been more intriguing if Vince had been cleared to compete and stepped in as the leader of Team WWF. But I still don't get why Kurt Angle, the eventual mole, actively wrestled and helped eliminate WWF guys. What would he have done if the numbers wound up in the Alliance's favor and it was 3-on-1 against The Rock? Though the irony wasn't lost on me that the last two guys in the match were both WWF guys and not a WCW ECW original. Don't forget to mention the events of the following night's Raw. Great show, guys. Keep up the great work. Well, Thulani, we will address the night after Raw all in due time.
And I believe at the Invasion pay-per-view is when the WCW had their mole in Steve Austin.
Yeah.
So they've done it both ways.
But totally valid point here with Kurt Angle fighting for 32 minutes against the team he would help.
Yeah, that was dumb. Dan Lewis. Hey guys, the only part of this pay-per-view I can really remember is the main event. I mostly remember being annoyed as hell that only two of the people in the Alliance team should have been there. Angle was out of place as a WCW guy, and his fake-out ruined all the good heat he had been gathering up to the point with stunts like the milk truck. Since the double-double cross at the end basically meant nothing at all, since he'd only joined them about 3 weeks before. Shane still managed to be the sore thumb in a match with Kane. As green as hell... Oh, God. These are just so hard to read sometimes. Sorry. Guys like DDP, the Dudleys, etc. could have been used much, much better instead of three WWF guys, one of which has no wrestling moves past falling off of a high thing into the padded thing. The only good thing... Okay, I'm done with this.
So. Robert Tonkinson. I enjoyed the banter between Heyman and JR in commentary throughout the main event, especially its climax. Pointless match didn't even make sense to have so many people that had nothing to do with the WCW and ECW on the Alliance team. Maybe they should have tried to wait to get some of the guys that were contracted to Turner, like Hogan, Goldberg, Nash, and Hall, which they brought in less than 6 months later, with the exception of Goldberg, who joined in 2003. It was sort of spoiled in less than a night when WWF turned heel and Austin turned face, effectively, in less than a night.
Mm-hmm. William Young. After rewatching this pay-per-view, I realized that my younger self probably made this seem better than it actually was. Not a terrible show, but it didn't have much to make it stand out either. I remember Heyman selling of Taz in the Immunity Battle Royal was rather funny, and Heyman as a whole did very well. The Test Edge match was decent, but honestly, the Survivor Series match, which used to be one of my favorites, doesn't hold up well. Sure, Shane McMahon gets the shit beaten out of him, but the match drags a lot, and some of the eliminations are way too sudden to make an effective impact. A show that did not age well, along with the death of an angle that aged everyone who watched it. Side note, Jericho's breakdown maneuver is terrible. Not even The Rock can sell it correctly the way it's done. So dare I say it, The Miz did something better than Chris Jericho.
Michael Dolan, I enjoyed this show, but even at 12 years old when it aired, I knew this was not what the culmination of WWF versus WCW should have been. I can only imagine trying to sell this show to someone who had stopped watching after WrestleMania 17 like most of my friends did. Witness the final chapter in the greatest wrestling rivalry of a generation, WWF versus WCW, featuring Christian versus Al Snow, Test versus Edge, Dudley's versus Hardy's, all WWF-associated performers, and the Jobber Battle Royal. Fast forward roughly 18 months and WWE at Goldberg, Hogan, Nash, and Flair. While it made sense to act quickly, I feel with the major players from Nitro's run, this angle would have been more compelling and drew more money if Vince let WCW look strong. I remember Heyman's promo on the Go Home SmackDown for this show being excellent, but after watching it again, it seems counterproductive. Heyman made me emphasize with the alliance as he highlighted how unethical Vince had been in the best building his corporate empire at the expense of the underdog ECW. I really miss Heyman and JR on commentary. Thanks for the podcasts.
Greg Brown, going to watch this event again, I found a couple of lead-up shows to the event as well. The main thing I noticed going back to this time is the chair shots to the face, literally about 10-plus per show. It's crazy to see given it's no longer in the usual product. Heading into and during the actual event, kicked off the awesome video packages featuring Puddle of Mud and Creed. This was a good time. Edge's What the Hell Is That All A Boot promo has got to be one of the worst of all time. I couldn't take Edge seriously as a world champion for about 12 months because of it, and I'm aware that was about 4 years after this event. It's that bad. I forgot that Regal had an issue with his nose, meaning it would start bleeding like there was no tomorrow in every match he was in around at this time. And why is it that every cross to WWF New York features a disgruntled superstar? All in all, a good show with a decent Edge and Test match, an entertaining cage match, and a good main event. It's just a shame that the invasion angle was such a mess, but given the payouts the WWF would have had to have done to drag over the big-name WCW talent and not piss off the current roster, I can understand that it could never work to its full potential. 6.5 out of 10.
Richard Isley, I thought this was a decent show back in the day, despite my cynicism at the time at the combination of WCW and ECW's finest. The whole thing with Angle siding with the Alliance, only to be outed as a spy for the WWF, was a little dumb and rushed, however. I think the fact we've already seen a flip turn by Austin months earlier lessened any potential impact. Highlight for me as a 17-year-old watching at the time, Stacy flashing her ass at Nick Patrick during the cage match, only to steal his keys. Real storytelling. Fondest memory of the show, though, that Desire video airing. Creed had me for those 2 to 3 minutes.
Oh, I guess you're right. It was a Creed, and then they overdubbed it. Ryan Daniels, this is a show I remember well. Not much to comment on as such in the undercard. Like the new music, Regal debuted on the show and thought he could have used that for longer than he did. Was a little surprised at the Dudley Boys winning the tag title unification match, and felt the Test Immunity Battle Royal win was telegraphed. What sticks out for me most from this event was the WWF Desire My Sacrifice video.
I think Pollock wins this one.
I loved this from the moment I saw it. It seemed different from anything I had seen at the time, and gave the sense of the WWF visually moving forward into the next decade, and I would rewind the VHS several times over the months to see it. The last thing is, of course, the winner-take-all match and the WWF's triumph over the Alliance. A good match, and was surprised when Kurt turned on the Alliance and helped the WWF win, cementing them as the leading force in sports entertainment. The shot of Vince standing victorious on the stage remains the image I most associate with this event, a milestone moment in WWE history, and a thoroughly entertaining pay-per-view.
I don't know if this was a milestone. Dennis Amaya, it's so sad to watch this show. The biggest storyline in the history of pro wrestling, and we see it end in about 6 months. And all thanks to big egos and idiotic booking. If you can overlook that, this show was pretty good. All the matches were decent to great. It also had a tremendous match with Edge and Test. It's so sad to see someone like Test, who had so much potential, end so badly. The commentary on the show was great. I loved the team of Heyman and Ross, and Heyman just taunting and being a prick asshole, but still able to get guys over. It's a shame that those two were together only a couple of months. One of the best commentary teams in history. The main event was one of the best Survivor Series matches in history, but featuring only two original Alliance guys on the team. The commentary for the main event was excellent and really made the match seem important. Overall, a pretty good show, full of sadness. 8 out of 10. Thank you for the reviews.
Well, that does it.
That does do it. Thank you very much, everyone, for your feedback. which you can always leave at reviewaway.com, and all of your news you can find at liveaudiowrestling.com. That's going to bring an end to the podcast. Big thank you to all of you for leaving your feedback, as well as Trish Stratus. You can check out her open house at Stratosphere Yoga this Saturday, noon till 4 p.m., and maybe Wei Ting and myself will be in attendance on Saturday. So that's something to look forward to. Of course, the MMA Expo, December 3rd and 4th, will be broadcasting live from noon to 5 Eastern. Come down, be on the show. It's at the International Center in Toronto, or just listen at stickcam.com/reviewaway. And for next week, Wei, a lot of people brought it up. We are going to review Raw from the night after the Survivor Series from 2001, because what an episode it was. One of those editions of Raw that you never forget, because a lot happened on that show, and you might have had what would be a good term? Your head was spinning from the booking from one night to the next, because it was like everyone turned, some turned back. It was like two completely different companies.
It was a reboot.
It was quite the reboot. So we'll take a look at that. The November 19th, 2001 edition of Raw will be reviewed next week, and we'll be back on Friday with Review and Impact. Myself, Wei Ting, Nate Milton, and Wei, let's go out with some music.
Well, what else can we go out with other than the song that I didn't get to hear? Creed, My Sacrifice.
Sacrifice, a perfect word to describe the invasion angle.
This brings tears to my eyes.